Okay, Jeff is our speaker today. He's going to speak on step two. You want a 5-minute warning, Jeff, when your time's almost up?
Yes, that would be great. Thank you, Sandy.
Okay, go ahead.
It's all yours.
Hi. Hello, everybody. My name is Jeff Ricketts. I'm a recovered Al-Anon and current BBA member going through the steps on chaos, creating, controlling, fixing. This is my home group, and so I'm grateful to be a part of it. Greetings. I'm in my home state of Maryland. I greet you from St. Mary's County, Southern Maryland, where I'm staying with my niece, actually, and felt completely unprepared to do this talk. But I've been away from the fellowship, so I thought this would be a good way to weave myself back in. And I'm using bits of text. My wife inadvertently took my big book back with her in her luggage. So I'm just going off notes, so you'll forgive me for that. as I was I took a swim today, and that came up. I asked God, what is the topic? What do you want me to talk about? And that came up, that God does not make too hard terms for those who earnestly seek. And so I had to put it to myself. Does my own God, my higher power of my understanding, make hard terms for me to contact that thing and access its power? And I think today the answer is no, it doesn't. It's quite there, available. It's within me, it's without. I'm just going to talk a little bit because I'm not exactly sure at what point that happened. I have certain parts of the BBA process that really got me into God consciousness. I wanted to mention too that I was talking to a fellow member that I hadn't seen in years. And he said he had, you know, been through the steps, and he had done the steps several times, and he had a really, really good sponsor. And he said, and he was really down. And he said, things were going really, really hard for me. And I reached out, and my sponsor abandoned me. And it was then that I became more of an atheist, frankly. And at first I thought, wow, that's that's not good. Sponsor reliant thing is not a good thing. But then I realized that, over the years that I had done the same thing, that I had, overly relied on sponsorship, on the fellowship for the spiritual awakening that I so hungered for. And absent those things, I thought that I couldn't have direct contact with a higher power. And that's not the case anymore. It's certainly the case that I need the fellowship and that I need to stay in the triangle. But I don't feel sponsor dependent the way I once did. I feel like sponsor dependence has been exchanged for God reliance. And that brings me to, I'm going to jump all around, and I'm going to share some of my story, because being back home in Maryland really takes me back to growing up here and growing up in alcoholism, and going from a life of self-reliance and being such a winner at the game of life, or at least I thought I was, to really low. And I just wanted to share that for me, and some of you know that I'm an actor, and that's the thing that was my way out of my alcoholic home. I was going to just become this great actor and leave all of this behind me, leave all this shambles of alcoholism and drug addiction and toxic relationships and unhealthy living. And, you know, I was going to be the, just the kind of gem in the family that would get myself out of here and become famous. And so when I was in high school, I was the star of my game. I was on top of my game. I was I was popular with the with girls, and then I went to drama school, and I don't know, I must have been about 5'10" and about 155 pounds. And when I went to drama school, I got sick. I thought that drama school was just going to be an extension of my stardom, that I would go there and I would learn, but it would mainly be more of an adulation school, where I would just continue to go from strength to strength and be promoted, and a little bit like Robin Williams, where Robin Williams went to drama school and eventually they were like, we don't have anything to teach you. You're just so good. So you can go. It wasn't that experience for me. Drama school was very hard and very critical. And I certainly did not have the internal tools to deal with criticism. I could deal with praise and adulation, but that was about it. And so in a very short time, I went from that like 155 pounds to about 130 pounds. And so I was severely underweight, and I had lost control of my life. My will and my life, you know, stopped working on all levels. And looking back, I do realize that where God put me in drama school was a place where I could fall apart without really dying, I think, because I feel like in drama school I was the walking dead. I had no concept of how to receive constructive criticism and to learn in that way. So that's my story, and this is my home group. So a lot of times I don't tell really what happened to me. And I just wanted to lead with that. So basically what happened was a series of me recreating my life. You know, now I'm going to recreate my life. I'm going to get strong again. I'm going to get on top again. And I would do so. It would take me a few years, and either health problems or emotional problems or relationship problems would dash me again to the rocks. And so I felt very much the comeback kid. You know, I'm going to come back. So New York is not working out, so I'll go to LA. So LA is not working out, so I'll go to London. London's not working out, I'll move back to where my wife's family is. You know, I was the king of the geographic. And I had no, I really didn't know, because a fair amount of this was during my Al-Anon program. And a lot of this, I didn't know that there was this spiritual malady. I knew that I needed God, and I was doing all the things, praying on my knees and asking for deliverance. But I didn't really get this idea that God does not make too hard terms for those who earnestly seek. I didn't know how to pull that off on my own. So I went to Al-Anon, and so a lot of my problems had to do with trouble in personal relationships, and couldn't control my emotional nature, those first two bedevilments. And so in Al-Anon, what we learned, and Al-Anon is quite a wonderful program, what we learned was detachment, right? So I learned because I feel like I'm a good student. I learned how to detach from others, how to what we call in Avalon, how to drop the rope. You know, it takes two people to argue, so I'll just drop the rope, and then, you know, I'm not engaged in contention with somebody else. I learned these little slogans. If somebody was being stubborn in an argument, I would say, I learned to say, you could be right, or you may be right. They're quite useful. Things like weight was one of the little slogans. Stands for, why am I talking? Like, if I'm jacked up talking and I'm not really speaking my truth, I can take a pause, this kind of thing. And a lot of these things were useful to me. But I found myself, what didn't work is that I found myself withdrawing more and more from the quote real world. You know, that I could go into an Al-Anon meeting, like my home group or one of these things, and there would be a safe environment where you could share, you know, like we do. You share, you have a timeshare, nobody's going to interrupt you. We're guided by the traditions. But I still found that the outside world was quite unsafe and dodgy, and that I was basically detaching all the time. I was basically just, you know, making myself neutral. I was trying to make myself neutral, which was fine, but there was something that was going on in my heart where I was longing to engage with the world, and I was longing to go further in things that I had left, to re-engage with my career, to re-engage with my heart's desire, frankly. And these tools were not offering me that. It was more, and you know, for those that were in Al-Anon who used that, I applaud them, and I'm glad that people get relief from that. But for me, it was not addressing the real spiritual malady, which was what we keep talking about in here, which was self-reliance, which was fear of people, places, and situations that I couldn't control, and relying on myself to keep myself safe and protected from these things. So I wasn't engaging with the world. I was detaching from it. And then I started doing the BBA work, and realizing through the series of asking, turning statements into questions and considerations, God does not make too hard terms for those who earnestly seek. The world, the realm of the spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive. So was that true for me? You know, I got to ask that. Is that true for you, Jeff? And it wasn't. And I would see other people around me whose lives were blowing up in a good way, in the BBA way, where they were engaging with their lives on a new and deeper level. And they had joy and peace and those promises of the third set promises that that when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed as long as we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. And here were the promises. This is was just the third step promises. As we felt new power flow in, as we began to enjoy peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We were reborn. And so I was looking for a reborn, and I kept struggling to get it. But it was only this BBA process that provided that for me. And I really don't know how this works. This is beyond mental comprehension. And I will say too, that those of us, you or me or whoever else, that are in the Al-Anonic frame, that are more into, it's what Lois Wilson, remember Lois Wilson, she finally started recovery one day when she threw her shoe at Bill because he was going off to a meeting and, you know, she was home and she was like, you know, go to one of your damn meetings. She threw the shoe at him. And then she realized that she had the emotional problem, that she had, there was something going on with her. Thank you, 5 minutes. And then she went on to talk about, and this is in Lois's story, you can get it in the Al-Anon literature. She went on to talk about that self-righteousness is the chief sin that basically is almost impossible to be pierced. It takes a bloody miracle. And for those of us that are in the Al-Anonic, the self-righteous persuasion, in the Bible, it's the there's the prodigal son that goes out, and he's the one he's kind of like the alcoholic. He just lives it up and then burns it to the ground and then goes home. And his father, the heavenly father, embraces him and says, "Welcome home." And it's the older son, that's me, the good one. You know, why him a party? What about me? You know, I did everything right. And so that I did everything right shit nearly kills me. That kills me. And I'm gonna read from our book now. So our troubles, self-righteousness, we think are basically of our own making. They arise out of myself, and I am an extreme example of self-will run riot, though I usually don't think so. This is the problem. And this was my problem, is that it took an act of God for me to see that my trouble was of my own making. So above everything else, I must be rid of this selfishness. And it's the selfishness that I don't even think I have. It said that in the earlier sentence. It must, or it kills me. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. I had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but I could not live up to them, even though I would have liked to. I could sponsor people and I could tell them what is a good idea and which pages to read, but I could not live up to them, even though I would have liked to. Neither could I reduce my self-centeredness or my self-righteousness much by wishing or trying on my own power. I had to have God's help. This is the how and why of it. And here's the solution. Here was the solution that was staring me in the face this whole time. And the BBA put it in such stark terms, this kind of like do or die, that I finally got it. So first of all, I had to quit playing God, which really means I have to give up control of my life and other people and my career and my family and my mother. First of all, I had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Okay, so I quit, I give up control. Next, I decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God is going to be my director. He is the principal, I am his agent. He is the father, and I am his child. Most good ideas are simple. Again, God does not make too hard terms for those who earnestly seek. It's a simple idea. Here it's saying most good ideas are simple. And this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which I passed to freedom. And then I mentioned the promises. When I sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. I had a new employer, being all powerful. He provided, I already went through that. So you get the promises. Now, I'm gonna say this. I'm gonna close it out with this passage that I just read from William James' Varieties of Religious Experience. Remember, that's the book that's in our big book that Bill was looking at in terms of if you want to choose your own higher power. Here's a book that offers a variety, and I find it very helpful. What I want to say is that the fear that has driven my life has been removed gradually, but power has come to me much more gradually. I don't let people abuse me anymore. Like God comes in and stands up and says no, and I don't know how that's happened, I'm not as apt to be pushed around or manipulated anymore, and that's miraculous. But power in terms of God demonstrating in my life and growing it and taking me from strength to strength, that's come slower for me. It's come, but very, very gradually. I just wanted to say that because, that's been my experience. I am going to end with this, and this is one of the religious experiences that happened to this man in this book, and I related to it, so I'm going to share it. So it says, where men are enlightened with the true light, they renounce all desire and choice and commit and commend themselves and all things to the eternal goodness, so that every enlightened man could say, I would fain be to the eternal goodness what his own hand is to a man. Such men are in a state of freedom because they have lost the fear of pain or hell and the hope of reward or heaven, and are living in pure submission to the eternal goodness in the perfect freedom of fervent love. When a man truly perceiveth and considereth himself who and what he is, and findeth himself utterly vile and wicked and unworthy, he falleth into such a deep abasement that it seemeth to him reason that all creatures in heaven and earth should rise against him. And therefore he will not and dare not desire any consolation and release, but he is willing to be unconsoled and unreleased. And he doth not grieve over his sufferings, for they are right in his eyes, and he hath nothing to say against them. This is what is meant by true repentance for sin. And he who is in this present time entereth into this hell, none may console him. Now God hath not forsaken a man in this hell, but he is laying his hand upon him, that the man may not desire nor regard anything but the eternal good only. And then, when the man neither careth for nor desireth anything but the eternal good alone, and seeketh not himself nor his own things, but the honor of God only, he is made a partaker of all manner of joy, bliss, peace, rest, and consolation. And so the man is henceforth in the kingdom of heaven. This hell and this heaven are two good, safe ways for a man, and happy is he who truly findeth them. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Let me turn off the recording. Hang on a second.